relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Can't get enough of my dulcet tones. Want exclusive content that you can't find anywhere else, including my take on the real story behind the fake news? Join my cabinet, Gorka's Cabinet, today. Go to sebgorka.com, S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A.com. Click on the Gorka's Cabinet banner and join the most exclusive club out there for content you can't find anywhere else and the knowledge you need. Gorka's Cabinet at sebgorka.com.
He may have been born in Britain, but now his heart is America's. It's your favorite legal immigrant, President Trump's former strategist, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Yes, we are back. What happened to the last 2 hours? They flew by like a Federation ship on Warp Factor 8. Why are we playing this music? Because we are living in exciting times. The battle has been joined. Maybe not with a genetically modified superhuman like Noonien Singh Khan. Well, most definitely not, because the Democrats aren't superhuman. On the contrary, and that is why we will win. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network. We've got calls on the line. Leonard, Roger, Jana, Chad, don't go anywhere. But first, we need to talk about what's happening in the swamp. I call it the counter coup, and the counter coup has begun. How do I know that? The recent events that have occurred in the White House and the recall of one certain ambassador from Berlin. It was like yesterday. I remember that moment when we were in the White House and I told General Mike Flynn, the then National Security Advisor, let's polygraph the whole bloody building. Why did I say that? I didn't work for General Flynn in the administration. I worked with him in the presidential transition team as part of his NSC team. And then I ended up in the strategic initiatives group of the White House under Steve Bannon. But something awful was happening. We were only a few days into the administration and we were facing constant leaks. One of the most egregious was the leak to the Washington Post of the classified telephone book of the National Security Council with the names and numbers of all the new directors, which was leaked to the media before Mike Flynn, General Flynn, had even signed off on the phone book. And that's when I said, let's just fill this building with DOJ polygraphers and find out who the leakers are. My advice was not taken. And what was the result? A few weeks later, after an interview with FBI agents that was meant to be just a friendly chat, Michael Flynn was charged with lying to federal agents and then was removed from his position. That was only the tip of the iceberg. Other people, innocent and perhaps less innocent, have also been targeted by the American intelligence services. George Papadopoulos, who really committed no crime. Paul Manafort, who's in prison, not for Russian collusion, but for making false statements on his mortgage application. And then, of course, we have Carter Page, against whom multiple secret FISA surveillance warrants were issued. And now even the Department of Justice has said that those warrants were illegal because they hid exculpatory information. They try. The deep state, whatever you want to call it, the permanent state, the permanent bureaucracy, the deep state, again and again they tried. From Stormy Daniels to Michael Cohen, for attempted subpoenas of the president's tax returns and his bank accounts, to fake whistleblowers and insubordinate lieutenant colonels born in the Ukraine, and then finally the impeachment trial in the Senate. The Democrats and their co-conspirators, like poor marksmen, repeatedly tried to kill the king and failed. And if you understand my reference in the music we played at the beginning, you'll understand why I said, like, poor marksman. We have 253 days to go until the next election. But finally, there is good news with regards to the swamp. Hope Hicks, one of the president's closest advisors, confidants, has been rehired. After a break, she has come back to the White House as an advisor to the president. Even more significant, John McKenty, who was really the president's body man in the White House until John Kelly, General Kelly, pushed him out in a very, very dishonorable fashion, he has returned to the White House and he has been made head of the Presidential Personnel Office. Long, long overdue. This is the personnel department for presidential administration. It was run by an individual called Johnny DeStefano, who was Boehner's right-hand man, who was a flunky of the GOP establishment, which meant for the first few years of the Trump administration, Bushites were hired over MAGA loyalists. And if you were close to the president, believed in his agenda, PPO would be your enemy, not your friend. Now Johnny McKenty is in charge and things will change. But perhaps most intriguing of all is the decision to dual hat my friend Richard Rick Grenell. He's still our ambassador to Germany, but as of last week, he has become the acting head, the acting director of national intelligence, and the left are going after him in a way that I haven't seen them attack a homosexual government official. Just one unbelievable audio cut. This was posted at the weekend from Obama's former national security advisor, Susan Rice, at an open event. Listen to the language she uses against Rick Grenell. Susan Rice, Cut 13.
Rick Grenell has absolutely no preparation, no background, no knowledge to be the DI. The problem is that Rick Grenell is one of the most nasty, dishonest people I've ever encountered. I'm not using this language lightly. He is a hack and a shill, and that's all he's ever been. And he has been put in that job for one reason, which is to turn the intelligence community into a tool for the president's re-election.
A nasty, dishonest hack? Is she looking in the mirror? He's there to turn the intelligence community into a political tool for the president's election? Well, that's exactly what you did, Susan Rice. And that's why you're so worried. And that's why you're talking right now publicly to attack this man who has a sterling record. Why? Because he will get to the bottom of those people in the intelligence community and the political appointees like yourself who are behind the most egregious perversion of federal government in modern history, Operation Crossfire Hurricane, the first time ever that the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA was used by an administration, the Obama administration, to illegally spy on a political presidential campaign. The swamp dwellers are squirming, and it is a delight to see. We must reestablish justice in this country in a way that reflects Lady Justice being blindfolded. And one of the most important things that I wish to communicate to you, our dear listeners, is the fact that not one thing has leaked from the investigation by John Durham into the origins of the Russia hoax. In fact, the only time he's spoken on the record is to correct the conclusions of the Department of Justice Michael Horowitz's report on political targeting by the Department of Justice and the FBI. He stood up and said, our conclusions do not match your conclusions, and he left it at that. And the most important underreported story of the last 5 years is how just a couple of months ago, something which was an administrative investigation changed into a criminal investigation. John Durham has found proof of felonies. He now has enough evidence to actually impanel a secret grand jury. And why do you do that? When you found out that there is enough evidence to charge members of the Obama administration with felony crimes. So, I understand the impatience. I understand the frustration. But I tell you, my friends, the time of reckoning is coming. The counter coup, the pushback on a political attempt to take down a duly elected president has begun, and good men are on the case, Rick Grenell included. It should have happened a long time ago, but the main thing that we have to note today is that it is happening. Be part of the pushback. Get on social media. Support those who are draining the swamp, Rick Grenell included, because the stakes have never, ever been higher. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, broadcasting from the mobile ReliefFactor.com studios, back with our good Newsmax buddy, former NYPD officer John Cardillo. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, don't touch that dial.
To be or not to be, MSNBC.
Portions of America First are brought to you in part by Created Equal, Clarence Thomas, in his own words.
Do you know Justice Clarence Thomas's story? Because it's an amazing one. All Americans, all conservatives should be familiar with it. I wasn't familiar enough. I didn't know that that man at the age of 16 went to a seminary, wanted to become a priest, and then in college lost his faith and became a radical leftist. Wow. You can learn this and much, much more in Created Equal, the best documentary I have seen in a long, long time. For theaters, tickets, and time, go to JusticeThomasMovie.com. That's JusticeThomasMovie.com. It is especially important because he was the Kavanaugh before Kavanaugh. Remember that, quote, high-tech lynching the Democrats led by Joe Biden tried to do against that righteous man. Please, in 2020 especially, everyone needs to see this movie, Created Equal, Justice Clarence Thomas in his own words. Go right now to JusticeThomasMovie.com. That's JusticeThomasMovie.com. Our last guest of the day, perfect timing, especially given what's out there in the media, is he just calls himself a Newsmax TV guy. Once NYPD, it says on your bio. Why are you laughing, John? Did you not write your bio?
I did write my bio, Sev. I did. I just funny to hear you say it.
I think you've changed your bio recently. He's, of course, John Cardillo, former NYPD. And I found out today that he is an equine individual. Is this true? Are you a horse man, John?
I have horses. Yeah, that's my little hobby off air. Yep.
I do. And why did you share that fact with me today?
Because when you told me that you hurt your knee, I showed you a picture of one of my horses bucking me off, didn't I? And how he banged my shoulder up pretty good, and my face was all bloody. So
you should have said that, you know, the photographs, you know, from you fighting Antifa. But it's a good story. Your horse took something out on you. But thank you for your sympathy. Yes, I'm lying up at home with my leg in a brace, but we can do live radio because that's who we are. Let's get to business. Follow this man right now on Twitter, John Cardillo. Cardillo. You're going to be at CPAC this week, correct?
I will be there. Yep, I'll be there.
Awesome. All right, we'll be on Radio Row. I'll be limping my way in there, and I can't wait to see you. But let's listen to just how crazy the other side is. This is from a Bernie Sanders Town Hall in Tacoma, Washington, and this is the person who warmed up the crowd for Bernie the Bolshevik. Her name is Kashama Sawant. Play Cut 12.
I am the socialist on the Seattle City Council. Bernie's socialist campaign is poised to win from Massachusetts to California. Bernie, Bernie. Bernie, Bernie. The Democratic leadership are attempting to block us and the Democratic establishment go after socialist and working class campaigns. To win Medicare for all, we need a powerful socialist movement to end all capitalist oppression. When we fight, 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 solidarity.
Wow. I'm a radio show host. I'm kind of speechless after that. How are you surviving your capitalist oppression, John Cardillo?
We're just horrible human beings, right? So let's tell the listeners a little about this woman. She ran as a proud socialist. I'll even go as far as to say she's probably really a communist after Seattle City Council and won. Some of her policy platforms were disarming police, no cash bail for even violent criminals, seizing private property, seizing private businesses. And people in the city of Seattle voted for that. They voted for that, right? I mean, you got cities like Seattle, you got cities like Portland, where the county sheriff pulled his deputies out of Portland, Oregon, because he couldn't guarantee their safety. Armed police officers, county sheriff thought the city of Portland was too dangerous for his cops. So she's from that Pacific Northwest radical leftist socialist commie cabal, and she's an elected official in the city of Seattle. Yeah, it's mind-blowing, isn't it?
So when people say to us, it's an exaggeration to say that the Democrats are socialists. What more evidence do we need, John?
Well, that's it, right, Seb? And here's the problem, Seb. The Democratic Party is only engaging in these histrionics over Bernie Sanders, not because they're truly moderates, but because he's shining a light on what they want to keep in the shadows.
Right.
Most of the parties, even the ones that call themselves, you and I both know, we've talked about this on air, off air, they believe exactly what Sanders believes in. Take all our guns, take our property, take our businesses, take our income. But Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton just sold it better. Sanders, as counterintuitive as it is, let's be honest, he's probably the most honest Dem out there, right? He's the guy saying, this is who we are, this is what we want to do, and if you elect me, I'm going to do it. And that has the Dems terrified that he's pulling the veil, he's scratching the ear off their true leanings.
Yeah, but there's some, positive signs on the left. Here we have the man who was a strategist, a high-ranking strategist to Bill Clinton. This is James Carville on MSNBC, and he doesn't pull any punches. James Carville, Cut 10.
If you want to vote for Bernie Sanders because you feel good about his program, because you don't like the banks on Wall Street or you don't like pharmaceuticals, that's completely legitimate. I understand that. If you're voting for him because you think he'll win the election because he'll galvanize heretofore sleepy parts of the electorate, then politically you're a fool. And that's just a fact that it's not even a debatable question.
So you have a leading Democrat saying, if you support Bernie, you're just a fool. So what's your expectation? Are we going to see a contested convention? Is there going to be drama? Is there going to be a revolution inside the revolution, John?
Well, I hope so. Look, I mean, either way, I think it's a big win-win for us, right? If Bernie's the nominee, you're never going to get Rust Belt guys going to work on assembly lines and women, sitting in traffic commuting to vote for a socialist. They want to keep their money. But if there's a contested convention, I think Bernie's supporters sit out or he runs third party and they split the Dem vote. And I wouldn't go as far as to say, Seb, they can irreparably damage the Democratic Party. It might take them a few cycles to get it back together. So I think either way this shakes out, Dems bet everything they had on Joe Biden. They didn't realize just how bad he was.
Right.
And now they're scrambling. Bloomberg obviously is their white knight, but let's face it, the guy is not likable. I don't care how many billions you have. You can't buy likability or charisma. Right, the Beatles said it best, money can't buy you love. He's a guy who is just not electable. He doesn't look like a president. He doesn't sound like a president. He's offensive. He talks about mother playing chess with the maid and the maid letting her win because the maid works for them. It doesn't resonate with regular Americans.
No, it doesn't, and you're absolutely right. I find it strange when people feel threatened by this little man who has to stand on a box. I don't care how many billions he has. You cannot change someone's personality. It is not something money can do. It's not just you can't buy love, you can't buy charisma. We're talking to John Cardillo, a Newsmax TV guy and an all-around excellent patriot. We're going to talk about his experience in the NYPD and what's happening today in New York. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Follow him right now, John Cardillo on Twitter, C-A-R-D-I-L-L-O. And wherever you are, whatever you're doing, don't forget to like us on YouTube and hit that little bell for the notifications so you never, ever miss a thing. Back in a moment.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and the battle for 1600.
Remember when men were men and the Democrats weren't lunatics? It's time to make America great again with our nation's most beloved legal immigrant, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
That's me. Thank you, Mr. Connery. And we are back. And I have to ask you, have you exploited your connections to me and Mike Lindell? You should. He is the inventor, the genius behind the MyPillow that I rest my head on every night. And so does the president. You heard what he said at his recent rally in Minnesota. You can get MyPillow and all his products 40% off and free shipping if you use my name. That's the biggest discount he's ever offered on TV or radio. Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-829-8468. That's 1-800-829-8468. MyPillow.com for all of his products. The mattress toppers, the Giza Dream sheets of Egyptian cotton, the pillows, the all of them, the travel pillows, even the pet beds. Use my name, G-O-R-K-A, for that massive discount. We are back with our good buddy, John Cardillo, who he sent me an article just now in the New York Post that I had failed to pick up in my preparation for the show. John, what is going on with Mayor de Blasio's security detail?
Yeah, so some stories coming out, right? Now, I've been hearing these stories anecdotally for years, from cops I knew or, you know, friends of friends, how he and his wife, you know, allegedly like to smoke weed and the cops are very uncomfortable. And that's why he was always late for events. He would make his cops drive his son back to school at Yale on New York City taxpayers' dime, the security detail, which really they're not supposed to do. The family gets security in the city. So a lot of these stories that were anecdotal are now starting to ring true as people leave his security detail, these detectives, and are going public. This one is part and parcel to a civil lawsuit, but this particular detective talks about how rude de Blasio was and how he had the cops around him on edge and how you couldn't make eye contact with him or talk to him. You know, in contrast to guys like Rudy Giuliani, whose the security detail loved him. I mean, I know a couple of these guys worked with a few of them before they went on Rudy's detail, and he treated them like his friends. And what was striking to me in the story I sent you, Seb, is that the same detective says he was moved over to Jerry Nadler's detail when he became head of the Judiciary Committee, because that's how it works. You get a security person from your local law enforcement agency if you're a committee head. And Jerry Nadler, he said, was a nice guy. He was able to talk to him, and he was approachable. But de Blasio and his wife and his daughter and his son were all just very, very rude.
But listen, you're a former NYPD officer. This isn't just about his security detail. There is a very, very big problem with the relationship between the mayor and the NYPD and the lack of support that the PD is getting. And look at the recent events on the street. So this is a much bigger issue, isn't it, John?
Oh, God, it goes back to 2014, right, Seb, when Officers Lou and Ramos were killed.
Yes.
And cops turned their backs on de Blasio at the funeral, and rightfully so. Bill de Blasio comes from a long line of old-school radicals. We're talking about separatist groups, domestic terror groups, Weather Underground, New Black Panther Party. These were all the people that he wanted to associate with. I mean, he even changed his own name. It was Warren Wilhelm Jr. He changes it to Bill de Blasio to sound more ethnic. As an Italian guy, I'm offended. Right? But he's the police hate de Blasio because they have no support. He's ceded New York City to the criminals. And look, that's not hyperbole. I worked the streets under David Dinkins, and then a few months later, a man named Rudy Giuliani was elected mayor. A few months after that, he was inaugurated. And I tell people this story, and I've said it to Rudy. Bernie Kerik, who was police commissioner, a good friend of mine.
Yep.
We saw a change in weeks, not months, not years, in weeks. When the mayor supports you, the city immediately gets safer. De Blasio does the exact opposite of what Rudy did, and he's reversing all of the gains.
I saw this amongst, I only know a portion of the military, but I saw this amongst our Green Beret brethren, that when Donald Trump came into office as the commander-in-chief and president, morale just skyrocketed. I had a guy from a Tier 1 unit come up to me in the White House and say, I need to tell you how good our guys feel that the president has our back. So what's going to happen next? What's your feeling, John? This can't go on. The lack of support, the lack of a healthy relationship between the mayor and the New York Police Department, sooner or later, something has to give, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But I'm going to tell you who I blame. I blame the Republican Party in New York State and City, Seb. And you and I are committed to the party. They have abandoned it. There's no infrastructure. New York City isn't – there's no infrastructure. So you got good people out there like that want to run. And the woman's name escapes me. There have been some very good people that want to run. The problem is they have no party infrastructure. De Blasio isn't elected by a plurality even of the city, certainly not a majority. They're seeing like 20% voter turnout, and he's winning 70% of the vote from the most radical leftists, the AOC voters, because our side isn't mounting
this
an effective challenge.
This is such an important message. For many problems, sadly, that we witness today, for the solution, we need to look in the mirror. It's time to step up. It's time for everybody to do their part wherever you are. God bless you, John. Follow him right now on Twitter at John Cardillo, C-A-R-D-I-L-L-O. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. So they're out of the closet, the socialists, the commies. How is this possible? Where did it come from? Well, I explain it all in my new book, The War for America's Soul. Listen to this excerpt.
Play eternal cut. Threat from those who wish to dismantle our nation from the inside is greater than it has been since the Civil War. Consider this. Today, in America, one of the two parties which divide power between themselves is most often represented by a group of freshman congresswomen, the so-called squad, although I prefer the four horsewomen of the Democrat apocalypse, made up of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and Ayanna Pressley. Two of these women are actually members of the Democratic Socialists of America, and were elected to office as such. Together, these four, who have within the space of less than 6 months managed to box the establishment Democrats, including their titular leader, Nancy Pelosi, into an irrelevant corner, have openly, either individually or as a group, espoused the following extreme stances. Demanded the dissolution of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency and the Department of Homeland Security, advocated open, unsecured borders with Mexico, supported taxpayer-funded health insurance for illegal aliens, called the Department of Homeland Security's holding facilities for illegal immigrants concentration camps, denounced Israel as an evil nation that has hypnotized the West, accused Jewish American lawmakers of having dual loyalties, stated that brown and black faces must have brown and black voices, and that all homosexuals must have one queer voice, and that none of these voices can dissent from their socialist agenda, described the horrendous attacks of September the 11th, 2001, as some people did something, refused to denounce the violent acts of Antifa, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS, proposed a gargantuan overhaul of the United States economy under the banner of a Green New Deal that would cost $90 trillion to implement and would lead to the banning of gasoline-powered engines and private air travel, as well as the demolition and reconstruction of any building deemed environmentally unsound. And this is just a fraction of the outrageous things that Ocasio-Cortez, Omar Tlaib, and Presley have said since the 2018 elections. How did we get here? How did these women, with their anti-Semitic, un-American, socialist views and their extremist identity politics, become the face of the Democrat Party? Well, it was no accident. As before, I owe a debt of gratitude to the late, great Andrew Breitbart and his autobiography, Righteous Indignation. The New Left in America can trace its genetic roots back to Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who almost single-handedly upended centuries of Western philosophical and theological wisdom. Instead of believing that man is fallen, fatally flawed, and prone to selfishness and evil, Rousseau denied the reality of thousands of years of human history and posited that man was inherently good, and that his goodness could be maximized if we turned away from the idea of individual rights, liberties, and duties, and instead focused on the communal will of the people, where the good of the whole would outweigh that of the individual, and we could socially engineer a better society. Rousseau's vision was central to Karl Marx's subsequent development of the collectivist ideology of communism. Like an ideological scrapbooker, Marx picked and purloined the ideas of others to build his philosophy. He took the ideas of the perfectibility of man and communalism from Rousseau. He lifted the idea of inevitable progress in Marx's vision to communism from Hegel. Hegel, a profoundly religious man, unlike the rabidly and militantly atheist Marx, saw the history of man as a perpetual progression, a series of qualitative improvements in our collective lot as one new idea. This progression, so Hegel believed, would increase our enlightenment until we perceived the ultimate synthesis, the purest version of truth's expression, which is God himself. Marx took Hegel's key dynamic and utterly removed God and truth. For Marx, the intangible was irrelevant. All that mattered was matter. And so was born his dialectic materialism, in which the thesis and the antithesis were expressions of the inherent conflict within society, the clash between the haves and the have-nots, the oppressor and the oppressed, the capitalist and the exploited workers, which would result in a final revolution after which there would be no classes, and the vaunted means of production, the factories that produced the wealth, would belong to everyone, and we would all live in a just world without any exploitation. No, seriously, this garbage is what Karl Marx sold with his books Das Kapital and The Communist Manifesto. And incredibly, some people believed this rubbish. So much so that they used it as a blueprint to sabotage and subvert multiple nations across the world, starting with Tsarist Russia and stretching all the way to Cuba and China. But then there was a problem. For all their attempts to try and effect a communist revolution in Western Europe and the United States, Marx's followers failed. And as Andrew Breitbart points out in his book, America was an especially tough nut for Marx's followers to crack because of how our nation was born.
That's the toughest chapter that I had to write in my new book, The War for America's Soul, to explain how we got here. AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, they didn't just appear by themselves. To know the full history and what it's going to take to beat them, get The War for America's Soul. You can even get a signed copy at our website, sebgorka.com, sebgorka.com, The War for America's Soul.
And slow, Snowflake. Your attack was no better than that of a clumsy child.
Oh, those snowflakes, they keep trying, but they keep failing. I can't believe we've done it. 3 hours with me immobile, with my leg brace on, sitting in an undisclosed location. I haven't moved. I literally have not moved for 3 hours because I can't, but you've done it. Thank you, friends. Thank you to our guests, our callers, and our great team back at America First headquarters. One more call of the day. Our good buddy in New Jersey, Leonardo, are you there? Line one.
Dr. Bionic Gorka, you're back in the fight.
I'm trying. I'm getting there, but I like the bionic thing. I do like Austin Majors, I have to say.
Trying. What a tremendous show today. If this is what you do when you're injured, oh, my God.
I was in surgery Friday, 7 a.m., and we're doing the show Monday. That's how we roll here, my buddy.
I was looking over the curriculum vitae of Philip Haney, and what a great patriotic American. Unbelievable.
Yeah, Philip Haney was a great guy. He was a brave man. He stood up as a whistleblower in the Obama administration to call out the political perversions, the things that were endangering Americans with their political distortion of reality at DHS. So all I know is, please, everybody out there, pray for the soul of Philip Haney. We don't know exactly what happened. Apparently, it's self-inflicted gunshot wound. I don't know if it was suicide, an accident, or perhaps murder, but this is a great man, and we lost him far, far too early. What brings you to our show today, Leonardo?
Well, I wanted to say that I hope he does rest in peace and console also his fiancée. Yes. I was looking forward to his new book. I thought he might be back in the administration, too, pretty soon.
There were reports that he was coming back to DHS under the Trump administration. Correct.
Yeah, I also just wanted to mention that as an Italian-American, I, like your guest, am really insulted that whatever his real name was. I don't even want to say de Blasio.
Helmut de Blasio, yes.
And I'm not surprised that him and his family are smoking the wacky weed. Explains their real hatred.
Could you imagine being a detective in the NYPD on his security detail, and then he and his family lights up a blunt? I mean, really? I mean, that tells you who these people think they are.
Yeah, just in their elitist bubble. And you know, I just have to say, too, that there's no way that Bloomberg, if he had any common sense, he'd get behind Biden. But I think the big showdown between Bernie and our greatest president, Donald Trump, is going to really expose a lot of this systematic infiltration.
I have to say, I'm very disturbed that Bernie has got so far, that socialism is so popular. But you are right, Leonardo, to see him on a debate stage with Donald Trump. Wow, I just can't wait. God bless you, Leonardo. In the meantime, everybody out there across the nation, across the planet, if you're a lover of freedom, watch your six, keep your head on a swivel, never give up, never give in. And as we say, stay frosty, my friends.